Hi guys, just to let you know, I have a promo of another podcast that I would love for you to listen to playing at the end of this episode, so please stay tuned until then.
Holly was bright, she was bubbly, she had a massive smile, and people say that when she went into a room, she lit the room up.
The hundreds of people inside this cathedral have just been reminded of who Holly was. Her grandfather has just spoken of a beautiful, vivacious young woman, and he's explained how this is the perfect venue for Holly because she was a huge Harry Potter fan. She loved nothing more than curling up with a can of Coke, a bar of chocolate, and a good movie. Small in stature but great in character, there were other tributes to Holly today. One from her 9-year-old cousin. Holly, it said, where H is for happy, O is for outstanding, L is for love because you love leopard print, I for intelligent, and E because everyone loves you. And from the numbers who came here today to pay their respects, that was obvious.
Hi M&Ms, welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. According to Women's Aid, domestic abuse is, quote, an incident or pattern of incidents of controlling, coercive, threatening, degrading, and violent behaviour, end quote. In the majority of cases, domestic violence is committed by a partner or ex-partner, but it can also be perpetrated by a family member or carer. In the vast majority of cases, domestic violence victims are quite often women. Domestic abuse can come in many forms, including, but not limited to, coercive control, psychological and/or emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, financial abuse, harassment, and stalking. Coercive control is defined as an act designed to make a person dependent on them by isolating them from support and depriving them of independence. Common examples of coercive behaviour include making threats or intimidating you, taking control over aspects of your everyday life, and humiliating, degrading, or dehumanising you. Women's Aid suggests that women are much more likely to experience domestic abuse than men, but that domestic abuse occurs regardless of gender, race, ethnicity, religious beliefs, sexuality, class, or disability. Holly Rebecca Gazzard was born on the 24th of July 1993 to her loving parents, Mandy and Nick Gazzard. Holly was the youngest of the couple's children, who already had a daughter, Chloe. As Holly and her big sister grew up, the pair developed a deep bond and became more like best friends than sisters.
It was fun growing up with Holly. She had so much energy. And she was always very playful and just always on the go. You couldn't keep up with her. She darted here, there and everywhere.
Holly loved sports as a child and especially enjoyed playing football and taking part in athletics, gymnastics and jiu-jitsu. Holly also loved horse riding and was so talented that she represented Tewkesbury Borough at tag rugby at middle school. Holly followed in her father's footsteps and was a dedicated Manchester United fan and loved visiting Old Trafford to watch them play. As a teenager, Holly became extremely fashion conscious and aware about her appearance. She always took pride in how she looked, especially her makeup, her hair, and her clothes. Holly's father, Nick, describes her as a very stylish girl who had ginger hair, which she ensured she always looked after well. At school, her ginger hair earned her the nickname Ginge. Whilst Holly was passionate about style, her real dream was to become a hairdresser, and she undertook work experience at a hairdresser's in Cheltenham in her final few years of school. When Holly left school, she knew exactly which direction she wished for her life to go in. She followed her childhood dream and trained to become a hairdresser.
When we were younger, we'd had those dolls that you could do hair with, but then I remember Holly just cut all her doll's hair off.
She didn't realise that it didn't grow back, so that was a one-off.
So it wasn't always the best way to start, but she soon started playing with kind of people's hair and ever since she was little, really.
In order to achieve her goal, Holly got an apprenticeship at Reflections House of Clive in January 2010, and it was here that Holly gained her NVQ 2 and 3 in hairdressing. In February of 2013, Holly met 20-year-old Asha Maslin, a 6-foot-tall security guard who towered over her.
When Holly first met Asha, she met him in a nightclub, in a bar that she used to work at. I wasn't aware of the relationship straight away. She didn't tell me, I don't know why.
I didn't know Asha before Holly started the relationship. The first time I met him was when she brought him home one day and she said, could she bring a friend home? We said, yes, that's not a problem. But when he came in, my wife said, oh, it's him. She knew him from school days where she worked, so I didn't know Asha, but Mandy did.
Mandy recalled that at school, Asha was rebellious, gobby, and mouthy. Holly and her mother were extremely close. However, despite the bond she shared with Mandy, Holly ignored her fears regarding her new boyfriend. Nevertheless, Mandy, Nick, and Chloe respected her choice of partner and invited him into their close-knit family home. They felt like Asha at least deserved a chance. After all, there was the possibility that maybe he'd changed since his school days. Chloe recollects her first impression of Asha. Quote, he was just a genuine guy. He just seemed quite normal, and they seemed quite happy. We used to have a laugh with him. He was quite jokey and quite comical, and I saw that Holly was happy, so I seemed happy. End quote. Nick also recalls his first few encounters with Asha. Quote, he seemed quite charming when we first met him. Quite polite, quite respectful, treated Holly nicely. End quote. Everything began well for Holly and Asha. Their relationship seemed to be going smoothly, and the couple appeared to be happy together. However, it wouldn't be long before the cracks began to show and the arguments began to occur. Chloe recalls hearing the couple arguing over the phone relatively often. However, initially, she simply put it down to the normal issues relationships encounter. Despite her initial acceptance of Asha, however, Chloe's concerns increased when the arguments became extremely frequent occurrences and Holly regularly had several missed calls and texts from Asha. The family believed that he was starting to show the signs of wanting to control Holly. Just 3 months into the relationship, Asha's outer appearance of a nice, respectful guy slipped and Holly and her family began to see the real Asha.
When it was Mandy's birthday and we invited him, we all six of us went out for a meal and he turned up an hour late. He was drunk. He was abusive and disrespectful in the restaurant to Mandy, to me, to Holly in particular, but also to the other staff in the restaurant. So Chloe's partner had to take him outside and tell him not to be disrespectful.
I was disgusted by it. I don't see how you can turn up to anyone, any other family or any friends or in that sort of state.
This event made Holly's family speculate as to whether Asha had actually changed or if it was just all an act so that they'd be more accepting of the relationship. The following day, Holly moved to Watford in London, 100 miles away from the safety of her family home, in an effort to further her career and improve her future. She got a job as a hairdresser on a cruise ship, and her family hoped that this job indicated that her and Asha's relationship was coming to an end. Quote, we thought, well, the relationship will fizzle out because Holly's going on her trip, end quote, her father recalled. Holly had gained a place at Steiner Academy in November 2012 and spent 5 weeks training before being allocated a hairdressing position on the Carnival line in the Bahamas. However, this hope would diminish fast when Asher followed Holly to Watford. Holly's family were destroyed by this. All they wanted was for Holly to start a new life, make new friends, and pass all the tests she required for her position on the cruise ship. They desperately didn't want Asher there distracting her from her lifelong goal and dream. After just a few weeks working on the cruise ship, Holly quit her job. Her family believed that this was at Asher's request and demand. They assumed that Asher was unhappy with not having Holly around, and he managed to persuade her to leave. Holly had told her family that he was constantly texting her and FaceTiming her, and this is how her family believed she was pulled back into his controlling and manipulating web. Although she'd left the job on the cruise ship, Holly remained in London and got a job in the Edge and Beauty Salon in Edgware. Her family continued to visit her in London frequently and became increasingly concerned over Asher's controlling behaviour.
There was another instance where we went to visit Holly in London, and she came out with us for the day for lunch, and whilst Holly was getting a drink on the bar, her phone was going off and off and off. I see the messages on the front, and one of the messages was, don't let them take you back, don't let them try and persuade to take you back, you need to stay here with me.
When Holly's family bore witness to the texts she had been receiving, they desperately attempted to persuade her to return to Gloucester with them. However, she declined the offer and chose instead to stay in London. Asher was becoming increasingly controlling and abusive towards Holly. One of these incidents occurred on a bank holiday weekend in August 2013, when the couple had been together for 6 months. It was a sweltering, cloudless weekend, and the couple went to Notting Hill Carnival. Holly later told Chloe that she'd taken one of Asher's cousins to the toilet as he didn't want to go alone. When Asher was unable to locate Holly, he began to panic and excessively texted and called her. It took Holly a while to return to Asher, as it was an extremely busy event, with 2.5 million attendees over the weekend. When she returned, Asher flew into a fit of rage over her not answering his calls and resulted in assaulting her. Due to this incident and London being an extremely expensive city to live in, Holly phoned her father and asked him to collect her as she wished to return home to her family in Gloucester. With Holly finally home and safe with her family, you'd think maybe she finally had the opportunity to continue her life and career. However, Asher had other ideas and refused to leave her alone, following her back to Gloucester. Understandably, Chloe wanted nothing to do with Asher due to the way he treated her younger sister, and Holly fell out with Chloe over this as she was adamant she wanted to give him another chance, and Chloe was more than disheartened about this decision. Still wishing to chase her childhood dream, Holly got a job at her local hair salon, Fringe Benefits and LaBelle Hair and Beauty. On their website, Holly's self-written bio read, quote, "My career as a hairdresser started when I was 16 and was offered an apprenticeship within a salon in Gloucester. I have always known this path was for me, as I have always taken a passionate interest in hair and fashion. I am a very passionate individual and take great pride in my work, so I can offer all my clients a unique, professional and personal experience. I am a fully qualified and experienced level 3 hair designer with a blend of in-salon and academy training. I have recently worked on a cruise ship which was an enlightening experience, but was not for me. I am now back home in my city and very excited to join Fringe Benefits and be part of their lovely team. I enjoy spending my free time with friends and family and going on shopping trips. I also like to keep fit and own a Pomeranian dog which keeps me on my toes." End quote. Holly's manager, Marina Hodgins, recalls that Holly's flair and creativity made her a fantastic addition to her team.
She was very cheerful, she was very fun-loving, she loved being part of the team and she loved all the girls. I just remember just having her around. Obviously she did fantastic hairdressing.
Sian Prislack, one of Holly's colleagues, described Holly for the British documentary Britain's Darkest Debuts. Quote, "Holly's personality was always very bright. She was a very vibrant person. I don't think there was a day that went past where we wouldn't have a serious giggle about one thing or another. we would quite often share funny pictures and videos on Facebook and tag each other in them, and then have a good old laugh about it the following day. I would definitely say Holly was somebody who was very fun-loving. End quote. Chloe states that Holly was extremely proud to be a hairdresser and was really talented at her job. She was so good, in fact, that people would quite often come into the salon and ask for Holly by name. Whilst Holly was doing well in her career and seemed like the vibrant, happy girl her colleagues described her as, this was all really a mask to cover her growing concerns about her boyfriend's behaviour. His control over Holly escalated daily, and his disrespectfulness towards her family only increased daily too. He would quite often turn up drunk and loud and act abusively towards the family. They'd let him into the house in order to avoid him causing a scene. Holly told her concerned family that when she went on a night out with friends, Asher would habitually turn up at the end of the night completely intoxicated. He always seemed to know where she was, and this meant that Holly could never spend alone time with her friends without him being present. Holly realised her family were correct, and realised she was unable to tolerate the relationship with Asher anymore. Nick offered to support Holly in her breakup, and suggested he have a chat with Asher himself, but she insisted she was happy to do it on her own, and reassured her father she'd do it amicably in an attempt to reduce the chances of him being abusive towards her. Holly phoned Asher and informed him she wished to end their relationship. However, despite Holly's attempts to be as nice as possible, Asher's response to this was to tell her that if she did break up with him, he'd commit suicide, and it would be her fault. Asher completely ignored Holly's wishes and continued to harass her with multiple texts and calls. On the 14th of February 2014, Holly attempted to get through to Asher in person. They went to a restaurant and had dinner before moving on to a pub. Throughout the evening, Holly desperately tried to tell Asher that she wished to cease their relationship. In the pub, Asher threw a glass of water in her face in response to her attempting to end the relationship. When Holly left the pub, he followed her back to the car and got into the car with her. He then asked to use Holly's phone so he could call someone to give him a lift home. However, when she obliged, he instead stole her bank card and emptied her bank account of £300. Holly was now even more terrified, and her family phoned the police for assistance.
The police came round on the Saturday night, and Mandy, myself and Holly, we sat in the room with them, and she told them all about it, and there were a number of things which she said there and then which we were not aware of, you know, particularly around some of the abuse that she'd been getting from him.
When the police were here, he was sending some text messages. The police would be able to witness what was said, and threats on my dad, threats on us as a family, and threats on the house.
The texts Holly received while the police were present only confirmed that Asher was unable to accept rejection. The following day, Chloe was extremely concerned about Holly's safety and repeatedly texted and called her to ensure she was okay. When Asher discovered that Holly had contacted the police, he was infuriated that she was taking back some of the control. Asher was furious that he'd lost control over Holly and that she had family around her who loved and cared for her. When Asher realised he may have finally lost Holly for good, he decided to regain control in the most heinous of ways. On Monday, the 17th of February, Holly received only a few texts from Asher, all of which she ignored. Other than that, she had no contact with him, and it appeared she'd had a good day and was possibly beginning to gain some routine back into her life. She returned home from work in a good mood and had a meal with her parents that evening. Chloe recalls that when Holly went over to her home, she seemed herself. The following day, Holly went into town briefly before heading into work at lunchtime. Sean, Holly's colleague, was working that day, and recalls that everyone was asking Holly if she was scared of what her controlling ex-boyfriend may do, but she reassured her colleagues that she was fine and not at all anxious or fearful. However, it was impossible for her to know that she should have been extremely fearful of what Asha was capable of. At 5:45 p.m, just before the salon was due to close, Asha abruptly entered and stormed over to the counter before punching Holly in the face. He then proceeded to stab his ex-girlfriend 14 times within a minute, while horrified customers witnessed the brutal attack, completely powerless in saving Holly. Asha had no fear of who saw the attack or the consequences of his actions. All he cared about was getting revenge on the girl who dared to turn him down. He ran off while Holly lay bleeding on the salon floor. Paramedics desperately attempted to save Holly, but their efforts failed and she passed away 2 hours after the attack as a result of severe blood loss. Deputy Senior Investigating Officer Angela Middlewood was one of the first officers to arrive at the scene.
I've been a police officer for 21 years and it is the worst scene that I've been to. When we arrived, there was obviously Holly had been stabbed, so there was a lot of blood in the area where she'd been attacked. So it was quite a shocking scene.
CCTV that was later found revealed Asha taking a DVD player to cash converters at 3:46 p.m. in order to get some money. He walked into Wilkinson's minutes later at 3:52 p.m. and used the £5 he'd got for the DVD player to buy a £3 kitchen knife. He then calmly walked along the Gloucester High Street, heading towards the hair salon where Holly worked. Holly's father, Nick, recalls the day his daughter was brutally attacked and murdered. Quote, "The Tuesday was like any other day at work. It was busy. I had to go and pick up a ring for Chloe in Bristol. We were invited round Chloe's for tea, as we were going to pick Holly up from the salon later on in the evening, as we normally did on a Tuesday evening. I'd forgotten to take the ring, so at about 6:30, I went back to the house to pick up the ring, and just as I was leaving, two policemen came down the drive and asked if I was Nick Gazzard. I said yes. He said, 'Would you mind coming inside?' They said, 'I've got some bad news for you. Is your daughter Holly Gazzard?' I said, 'Yeah.' She said, 'I'm very sorry, but there's been an altercation and she's been killed.' Those words, I think, are the worst that a father could hear. 'Your daughter has been killed.' It was just devastating, absolutely devastating. The thought that was going through my mind was, how am I going to tell Mandy and Chloe that Holly has been killed? That was the only thought that was going through my mind. Something that a father should never have to do." End quote. Nick returned to Chloe's house after learning the horrendous news of his youngest daughter's death, challenged with the task of informing his eldest daughter and his wife.
I thought he'd been a while and was a bit concerned, and he came back through the door and he was completely white, and he tried to usher me into the living room where my daughter was and my mum. And he looked at my mum and said, "I've got some really bad news. Holly's been stabbed and she's died." And my mum kind of fell into the sofa and was crying, and I just felt completely numb, as if it hadn't have happened.
Forensic investigators combed the scene for any forensic evidence. However, due to the murder taking place in such a public location, collecting forensic evidence became an extremely difficult task. Many people had been in and out of the salon all day, which would make it a slightly more arduous task to forensically link Asha to the murder. It was essential that the police worked swiftly, as the killer potentially posed a serious risk to the public. After Holly's murder, her family had one last chance to say goodbye to their vibrant, happy daughter.
Probably the second worst thing I've had to do in my life, apart from tell Mandy and Chloe that she was dead, was to see her laid on that slab, very small, very, very petite, in a white gown. My baby just laid there. That was really upsetting, really upsetting.
take such trauma. All I saw was her aunt, and the witch had some wounds on her face. And I couldn't even bring myself to touch her. We weren't allowed to pick her up. We could only hold her hand and kiss her once. And I held my mum's hand over her hand. She was ice cold and she hated being cold. She looked like a child. She looked like a child asleep. And I knew it was her, but it didn't look like Holly. It didn't look like her at all.
Due to the risk Asha Maslin posed to Holly's family, they were asked by police to move to a safe location. Mick and Mandy went to her mum's, whilst Chloe went to her partner's mum's. Police spent 8 hours scouring the streets of Gloucester, trying to locate their brutal killer. Eventually, they spotted him on CCTV getting into a taxi, and once they tracked that taxi down, they were able to find Asha hiding out at a friend's house and arrested the 22-year-old for Holly's murder. Angela Middlewood recalls Asha's demeanour when they arrested him for Holly's murder. Quote, "He showed no remorse throughout that time and made no comment to questions when he was asked. He was no more cooperative when it got to the actual questioning of him," end quote. It would later be revealed that Asha had been arrested 23 times prior to Holly's murder for a variety of offences including domestic violence, criminal damage, possession of Class A drugs and theft. It was clear that Holly nor her family had any idea just how dangerous Asha was, who had been involved in 24 violent incidents, 3 of which involved Holly, 12 were committed against an ex-girlfriend, 2 involved another former partner, and 3 involved his own mother. The remaining 4 violent attacks were committed against other unnamed victims. Holly's funeral was held on the 17th of March 2014 at Gloucester's Cathedral to cater for the hundreds of mourners that attended to pay respects to the girl who was brutally taken much too early. The mourners were asked to wear bright colours to commemorate Holly's vibrant personality. Due to Holly's tiny stature, the coffin wasn't large enough for 6 pallbearers to carry, so they had to reduce it down to just 4 of her closest friends. There was a lot of physical evidence against Asha. They had the CCTV footage of him buying the knife and making his way to the salon. The police were also able to recover the knife he had used to stab Holly at a local building site, and the staff in the salon knew him well enough to identify him as the perpetrator of the brutal crime. With all this evidence against him, Asha pleaded guilty to murder. On the 16th of July 2014, Asha Maslin was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 24 years for the murder of Holly Gazzard, a murder which the judge residing over the case described as merciless. In Holly's memory, and to keep her legacy alive, Holly's family set up the Holly Gazzard Trust. The trust works to prevent domestic violence by educating people about it and the effects it has. Due to Holly's lifelong dream of becoming a hairdresser and her passion for her career, the trust also funds hairdressing courses for young people who do not have the money to fund it themselves. The trust's aim is to promote healthy relationships, support other people to accomplish their dreams, and they also campaign to reduce antisocial behaviour and knife crime.
Holly's life was taken far too soon, so we wanted to set something up in her name to keep her memory alive, keep her legacy going, and do something that she would have done. She would have loved what we're doing. It would have been at her heart.
With the trust, she'll be even a bigger part of the family now going forward, because we want to celebrate her life by helping others. Hopefully we can make a positive out of this negative, and we can do a lot of good for other people, both in terms of education, get them through their hairdressing exams, and also hopefully preventing people going through domestic abuse as well.
The website states, quote, "While Holly's family are still devastated by her untimely death and unable to change the events of that fateful day, they hope that the funds raised through HGT will help others find a better future and reach their potential. The trust relies on the generosity of the individuals and companies that support it and hold a number of official fundraising initiatives each year." End quote. If you are a victim of domestic abuse and require support, you can contact the National Domestic Violence Helpline anytime, day or night, on 0800 2000 247. Alternatively, you can contact the Samaritans on 116 123. If you are in immediate danger, please ring 999 or your country's emergency number. Alternatively, if you are being stalked, please contact the National Stalking Helpline on 0808 802 0300. On the Holly Gazzard Trust website, her family describe her as a, quote, "determined and successful individual," end quote. The blurb goes on to say that Holly was, quote, "a true inspiration to others, loved by her family and friends, and highly regarded by her colleagues and clients alike. Holly was vibrant, fun, vivacious, talented, and beautiful. She is sadly missed by all who knew her." End quote.
Holly going has left a massive hole in our hearts, in the family, but she will always be a part of the family.
He's taken my sister, my best friend, the only person that I knew would be there for me from when we were children to when we grew older, because we're sisters. He's taken the life from our family, and there's a big hole missing now.
We'd like Holly remembered as a young, vibrant, vivacious, fun-loving individual who, when she walked into the room, lit up the room and had friends all over the place. And she made people smile.
I'm going to end this episode with Holly's favourite quote and words that everyone should live by. Quote, "Have hope, be strong, laugh loud and play hard. Live in the moment, smile often, dream big, remember you are loved, and never, ever give up." End quote. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.
We were able to capture some fingerprints. But again, same as the DNA, we haven't been able to match that to anybody.
He's probably one of the biggest considerate, open-hearted people that I knew. But, you know, honestly, he had an addiction too, right?
Just the writing, we can talk. There's a possibility here that there were childhood traumas.
We're trying to turn every stone to find evidence.
This is Genevieve Germain, host of True Crime Real Time. Join me on a bi-weekly dive into the lives of the missing and murdered, available wherever you listen to your podcasts. You'll never know who else you'll meet along the way.